The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Mark Schanowski, and it's my privilege to be joined by the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Bulls beat reporter, Joe Cowley. Joe, thanks for joining us. I know that you made a quick getaway after John Paxson's news conference. Are you going to have some fun this offseason?
Yeah, you know, just get back to some family time and some downtime and escape the NBA road life that consumed my existence for the last 6 months. So, yeah, it'd be a nice little break.
Hey, before we get into talking about basketball and what the Bulls might be doing this offseason, I want to talk a little bit about you and your reporting style. I know people in Chicago are very familiar with you. You covered the White Sox for a long time, and then you moved over to the Bulls beat. Some people, I think, out there have this perception that you go out of your way to antagonize the people you cover. What would you say to those people that think that you're looking for negative angles?
You know, I would say quite the opposite. You know, I mean, I think my job as a writer is to be that voice of the fan and to let the fans know, is this what you want to spend your money? Is this the product you want to support? Is this the product that you believe in and want to invest that hard-earned money? Because, I mean, look, there's only your average Chicago sports fan only has so much disposable income. And is this what they want to spend it on? What's going on with this team? And I try to cover the team like how I would want to know about what's going on behind the doors of my favorite team. And, you know, these guys are humans, and these guys are kind of everyday guys, and it isn't this this big podium that they should stand on and kind of be revered. I mean, they have flaws. They make mistakes. They say dumb things. They say great things. So I just try to capture that side of it and be that voice of the fan. I mean, that's our job, to be watchdogs and to hold everybody accountable. You know, I told Jerry Reinsdorf one time, if he didn't want me covering the team so hard, stop charging for tickets. Make every game free, and then we'll look at the way I cover a team. So, you know, I think there is a priority of accountability. To me, it always starts with ownership, then it goes to the front office, and then it goes down to coaching and players. And that's the way I approach it, and that's the way I try to. You know, I'm not trying to antagonize. I'm actually trying to get to the bottom of the truth of a lot of things and pull the curtain back on some things. And, you know, that's just kind of my mentality.
How did you feel when your bosses at the Sun-Times approached you about switching from the White Sox to the Bulls? So you're basically going from one Reinsdorf team to another.
Yeah, well, see, the way it had been, so I'd been doing the White Sox, and then when they traded Ozzie down to Miami, you know, I met with the sports editor at the time, Chris DeLuca, and some other people, and we just decided there was very little left there for me. Very few bridges weren't burnt, and there was no reason for me to stay there. So I actually took a column over for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and then new ownership came in, and they wanted only the two columnists and not three, so they stuck with seniority, and Morrissey and Tellender stayed, and so they put me on the Bears beat for, I think it was about two and a half months of hell, I like to call it. It was completely different from what I was used to. You know, when you're covering baseball all those years and you're always moving and traveling and, you know, everything is just kind of go, go, go. And all of a sudden you're sitting in a cubicle, you know, for all those people that have gone and the media people that have gone and cover the Bears. It's kind of like a banker's job. You're basically in a cubicle, you know, 5 days a week, and then you go cover this one game. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. I love the NFL. That's my favorite sport. But I always wanted to kind of keep that separate and watch that as a fan. And so they had me fill in a couple times for the Bulls. And then when they said, hey, do you want to do it? I don't really think DeLuca got to finish the sentence before I said, yeah, I'll definitely jump over the Bulls. And so, yeah, it's been You know, I initially had some concerns because I thought, okay, well, I'm going from one Reinsdorf to another, and at the end of the day, the old man has a say in a lot of things. But it's been, I've cleared up some misconceptions I had about Michael Reinsdorf. You know, I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf and I will ever speak. It's unfortunate because I think I had his back initially very early on when I came to Chicago, coming from Cleveland and seeing the championships he put up in Chicago and this negative feeling about him. I just couldn't wrap my arms around him. A guy like that in Cleveland that delivered 7 championships to a city would have statues and streets named after him. And to be a guy that was kind of almost vilified at times was kind of confusing to me. And then the relationship went south, and it's never really regained itself. And I'm just glad that Michael Reinsdorf has actually said to me, you know, I'm not my father. Obviously, I love my father and stuff, but, you know, I judge people differently, so I'm not going to just lump you in with how my dad felt about you. And I think that's made things easier at times. So, yeah, it's been an interesting road.
You mentioned misconceptions regarding Michael. What were you referring to there?
I thought he was just going to be his father's son, and I thought it was going to be just about the business of basketball. And I still think there's fans that there are lingering feelings that the Bulls are just the financial gain for the Reinsdorfs and the White Sox are the passion. And I won't argue that part of it from Jerry. I remember when the White Sox won, you know, Jerry was would I think he even openly said that he would take that one World Series ring that he had and put it over all 6 Bulls championships, because that's how much baseball meant to him. That's how much the White Sox meant to him. What I liked about Michael and what I've seen the last couple of years since his dad has kind of, you know, allowed him to gain more and more say and more power is the way he has kind of put himself into every department. He's not just coming in and saying, okay, I'm the guy in charge. He's tried to actually learn each department, how it works, the people in it. I still wish there wasn't this loyalty factor that seems to hang around, and he's denied how strong that loyalty is with the whole Gar Forman thing. But it's hard to, and there's something to be said about how much say the Jerry still has in things. And Jerry's almost working on defiance now. It's not even loyalty, it's defiance. And I saw that firsthand with the Ozzie and Kenny thing, and the way he's always chose upper management over managers and coaches, making those guys almost feel disposable. He let Hawk get rid of Tony La Russa. He let Kenny trade Ozzie. He let Gar and Pax get rid of Tibbs. And you go right down the line. And the front office seems to have almost lifetime scholarships where coaches and managers, I think, are treated unfairly and pretty disposable in the eyes of Jerry Reinsdorf. And I hope Michael changes that as far as the Bulls go. We'll see. And, you know, there's just some things that are very promising about the way he does things, and I hope they come to fruition. And he could say it, and he can at least start doing the groundwork. But until they actually come to fruition and I say, okay, the son definitely is different than the father, it's just talk. So, I'm waiting anxiously to kind of see if that plays out.
Well, speaking of loyalty, it's no secret that Jim Boylan quickly won over the Reinsdorfs, won over John Paxson and Gar Forman, and is now in a position where I know you reported last week that they're talking about a long-term extension for Boylan. Why do you think he was able to win everyone over so convincingly when he had never been an NBA head coach before, and he had been on the same staff with Fred Hoiberg that had failed in the 3.5 years on the job?
I think the key thing is he has a Tibbs mentality. He has a blue-collar mentality that Paxson embraces and believes in, but his door's not locked like Tibbs's was. There's not that belief in separation of coach, player, / front office. And I'm anxious to see how that works, because to me, the best teams, whether it was that Ozzie team that won a championship, some of those Tibbs teams, they always kind of had that edge of it's us in this locker room or in this clubhouse, not only against the rest of the league, but sometimes against our own front office that want to trade you or that want to demote your value. And I thought guys always kind of responded a little bit better to that. So I'm anxious to see if Jim, you know, guys don't always want to see Jim talking to Gar Forman or John Paxson. I think there's a trust thing there, and I'm anxious to see if Jim can start to understand that a bit more. But as of right now, he's kind of the perfect mentality. He's got that that likability that, that Fred Hoiberg had as far as the front office was concerned, where his door is open, you can approach him, you can talk to him, but he's got that grind it, blue collar, tough guy mentality that Tibbs had. So I think he's kind of the fills that perfect, checks the boxes of what Paxton wants. And the other thing, too, that I don't think could be discounted is he keeps all those guys involved in the conversation, involved in the everyday. Hey, this is what we did today. I'm going to run it by Doug because I know Doug's your guy. I'm going to make sure that you guys saw that we did this. I'm not saying that he kisses up to him. That's just his managerial style, is to let everyone know, I know this is what you wanted done. This is what I did, and this is what we're going to do forward. So he communicates that stuff very well, and I'm anxious to see how that continues to play out with the players. Do they start to notice, hey, dude, you're just doing this for upper management, and you're not doing it for us? Or if they maybe he starts to kind of get that bunker mentality and say, all right, look, I know upper management wants this, but, hey, this is how we're going to do it. I think you need that in a successful organization where – they just everyone involved kind of has that bunker mentality somewhat. It doesn't have to be volatile, like, you know, it got with Thibodeau, but I think it has to exist for players to trust that coach or trust that manager fully.
Well, obviously, Boylan had some relationships with some of the players because he had been the assistant head coach for 3-plus years. But when you move over, you know, the 18 inches to the head coaching position, you've got to form all new relationships. And there were certainly some rough spots that initial week. You know, all the reports of a potential player revolt where players were wondering whether they should show up for a practice after a back-to-back situation. Right. I know the one guy that he had to win over was Zach LaVine, because Zach LaVine had total offensive freedom under Fred Hoiberg. Basically, he could shoot anytime he wanted in any situation. I think there was very little repercussions from Fred. Now, Jim comes in, and he wants to change the way Zach wants to play. And, Joe, during the months of January and early February and a lot of December as well, you'd see Zach in that post-game locker room, and he was despondent. It wasn't just the losing. It just seemed like he felt like he'd lost his best friend. What was it that changed the whole relationship between Boylan and Zach?
Well, I think the key thing was bringing Otto Porter in. I mean, you've been around the NBA. You know how it works. And I'd say the same thing is around baseball. These guys follow the money, okay? So the big dog that has the money, they watch what he's getting, what he's doing, how he carries himself. So think about it. I mean, at the time, who was his equal? Jabari Parker. Jabari could give a damn about Jim Boylan. He could give a damn about practice. He could give a damn about coming up for warm-ups, or for whether it's halftime or before the game when he was kind of in no man's land and not playing. And I think Zach, who doesn't understand leadership yet and sometimes is more of a follower than a leader, saw that and said, okay, well, I'm the face of this organization. This is the other guy in my pay grade. So this is the business of basketball. And on top of it, this Jim Boylan guy, I know, you know, Zach wasn't dumb. He got what was going on, that he was trying to break the Colts and get back to the basics and discipline. And Zach, you know, in year five, is thinking, I don't need to do that anymore. You know, as a rookie, I went through that, and then with Tibbs that one year, I went through that. I don't need this anymore. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm. And, yeah, I mean, you said it best. I've never seen a guy in that locker room despondent after games with frustration for that long. I mean, this didn't go on for a couple games. I mean, this was for weeks where I'm like, you know, as media guys, we were turning together and go, if, you know, Zach doesn't get on board here, they either got to trade him or they got to get rid of Jim, because this is not going to end well. But I think they saw that the water was being poisoned by Jabari. So now you bring in a guy that makes $6 million to $7 million more a year than Zach and does everything right. Jim says jump. He's like, this is how high you jump, everybody. And this is how hard you practice. And listen how vocal I am on defense. And look at the intangibles I bring. And you have to play both sides of the ball. Because then what can Zach do? What's his argument then? Well, you know, I don't have to be like that guy. Yeah, you do, because that guy's making more money than you. So I think that was huge for them as far as bringing Otto Porter in, that contract, and that type of guy he was, who came from Georgetown and from the, you know, the bosom of John Thompson and the discipline of basketball that those guys play, you know, with the Hoyas. And I think that was huge for Zach seeing a different light. And then, you know, Jim changed things too. I think the guys initially were put off by the idea that this was going to be our new offense. When Jim told us all along, look, first we're going to learn how to crawl. It's going to be ugly. Then we're going to learn how to walk, and it's still going to look ugly. Then we're going to get the boys to run, because he wanted them to understand it's a step-by-step process. You have to follow the steps. You have to follow what I ask of you. And so, you know, that's the way they did it. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm of things that put Zach in that dark place, and then also that got him out.
You know, this whole Otto Porter thing to me is a bit of a head-scratcher, Joe. You know, his sixth season in the league, he played great in the 15 games he did play for the Bulls, right. But of course then went out early with an injury. But here's a guy who's averaged about 12.5 points for his career. He's a decent three-point shooter, but, you know, he's never really made a big impact in the league. And we heard on the night of the trade that, well, he's a big fan. You know, the analytics people love him because he shows up in all these advanced stats, that he's a great player. But he was always in the shadow of Beal and Wall in Washington. And then here he comes into Chicago, and immediately he's almost branded as a savior. Like, well, we could have gone into free agency and chased Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant, but look, we got Otto Porter, and we're happy to pay him whatever it is, $55 million over the next 2 years. To me, it's a head-scratcher. You'd think in a market like Chicago, you wouldn't have to make that kind of a move. You should be a player for those guys in free agency. Do you think the Porter thing has unexpectedly worked out much better than Gar and Pax could have possibly hoped?
Well, it's almost worked out by mistake. I mean, they had to do it because they know they're not getting free agents come to that door, sit down at that table, big-name free agents, sit down at that table and say, yeah, I want to be a Chicago Bull. I really like what's going on here. They can't sell the program to those kind of guys. That's a big problem. And, you know, you were there on media day when I asked John about that. And John, they have some perception that I don't think is realistic of, yes, at some point this is going to be a sellable item to a big-name free agent. I don't see it. I don't see that they'll have the roster room for that. They're hoping that it's going to be in-house superstars that kind of bud out of this thing. So I don't, you know, that's why I think this thing's headed right back to mediocrity and you know, one playoff round, maybe two, and patting each other on the back and saying, look, we're back in the playoffs. That's how I think this thing ends, which was not, you know, that's one thing if that's what your goal was. But when you blew it up and you traded Jimmy Butler, an all-NBA player, you said, and, you know, I looked back at John Paxson that day and at the Q&A, you said you were getting out of mediocrity and building back towards a championship type team. And so I'm not seeing that. So, yeah, that was them throwing their hands up in the air and saying, we can't get big-name free agents, so we have to add contracts that a big-name free agent would be in that territory, but they don't have that same talent. So let's try sneaking this guy, because the analytics do say he was overshadowed with this backcourt, this ball control, ball dominant backcourt. He's going to do the little things, and maybe he can be something better. And I think what he is the perfect glue guy. He is, which they didn't have. So he does bring a benefit. I don't think anyone knew that he would step up and be this vocal guy. He didn't have that reputation in Washington. So that's been an unexpected surprise. But it's a white flag on saying we have no chance at big-name free agents in 2019. And the problem is the way it's set up right now, unless someone does something weird this season with their contract and does, you know, 1 year with options and things like that, the 20 and 21 free agent classes don't set up well either. So this is it. And they felt like, you know, we're not going to get a big-name guy, so we have to trade for our free agents. So this is their big free agent acquisition. It was a trade.
Joe, when you look at the roster, the one position that stands out as a glaring need for improvement is point guard, where Chris Dunn was one of the key guys they got back at the Jimmy Butler trade, a guy they kind of lusted after when he came out in the draft in 2016, weren't able to get him that year, then got him in the Jimmy Butler trade a year later. But because of injuries and changing role, he really hasn't come close to what the expectations were for him. What do you think they're going to do? You think they'll get one guy in the draft and a free agent, or do you think Chris is going to get another chance in training camp in September?
Yeah, I think it all starts, where are you picking for the draft? If they're one or two, you know, obviously they'll go Zion, and then
John Morant.
If they got one, if they got two, they go John Morant, right? So then you can say, okay, well, John Morant's our point guard of the future, so let's go on the cheap. I still think they'll look to add a veteran point guard and then try and ship Chris Dunn. I don't think there's any market out there for him. I don't think there's any value, but that would be their hope and their ideal situation is to ship Chris Dunn. if they're out of those two spots and they're in that 4, 5, 6 range, do they go point guard from Vandy? Is that a reach, or do they go with, you know, Barrett or Cam Reddish or Culver? I mean, do they look that way and then just say, all right, we have that $20 million in money. We're not going to spend it on one free agent, because that's already been told us by Michael Reinsdorf, to both Casey Johnson and myself, and the interviews that he did with us. So they want to break that up. So you're not getting a top-tier veteran point guard. You're going to get that second tier, and that's where, you know, I already wrote last week that they've looked heavily at guys like Ish Smith. Patrick Beverly, they'll kick the tires on him and check the market. I have a feeling he's going to go for a lot more than people think, though.
You know, Joe, I was going to ask you about that, because he's only making $5 million. He's making less right now than either Ish Smith or Corey Joseph.
Yeah.
Why do you think he's going to make so much more in free agency?
I just have a feeling people are starting to see his value a bit more, especially in this playoff series, and what he's doing to KD and getting in KD's hotel, and then it has a rented room up there. I just think on the open market, he's going to go for more. I just have a feeling he's more of a $10 million guy, and I don't know if they want to go that far. I definitely don't think they'll kick the tires on him, though, because of the defensive intangibles he brings, because of the toughness he brings, a Jim Boylan-type guy. I just have a feeling that we're going to see a Corey Joseph or Ish Smith or someone like that kind of move into this into that spot and push Chris Dunn and make Chris Dunn probably again, this is all dependent on them not getting John Morant and not getting a point guard in the draft, that they go that route and go into camp and see how Chris Dunn actually does competing for a spot. If you think he hasn't had to compete, I mean, who's been the competition? You know what I mean? He hasn't had no competition since he's gotten to the Bulls. It's kind of been handed to him. And maybe that's a guy that needs that. I don't know. His career path has been very confusing, because if you go back to what he was last December and January, when it was he and Lowry and closing out games, I'm like, all right, this dude's starting to get it. You know, the Bulls kind of got lightning in a bottle with this guy. He's a great athlete, wants to play defense. You know, he's the perimeter defender. And then it just kind of just – I don't know if it was the Trae Young talk or whatever, but, you know, it started in the summer with him kind of just half-assing a couple workouts, and that got, you know, from the training staff to the coaching staff, and that raised a red flag. And then they brought Trae Young in, and there's talk of Colin Sexton. It came down to Wendell Carter and Colin Sexton on draft night. That was still being debated in the war room. And obviously they go with Wendell Carter. And I don't know if he's just, you know, just kind of just been butthurt and not gotten over it, but he just kind of came in with a different attitude. He was almost shut down to the media. I mean, he would answer the questions, but he just didn't have a lot of life like he did. And it almost translated to on the court. He had some injuries. And now you start saying, is this guy just injury prone? Because he's had a lot of fluke injuries. So his career path has been a really bizarre one the last year and a half. That's really hard to sum up.
Well, I'll tell you what, if the Bulls could enter next season with a combination of either John Morant or the kid from Vanderbilt, Darius Garland, backed up and supported by Patrick Beverley, I think they would really improve their point guard situation quite a bit. Because to me, especially watching this series with Golden State and the Clippers, I mean, right now, Patrick Beverley looks like the reincarnation of Norm Van Leer. I mean, he doesn't have Norm's offensive talent, but, I mean, this guy is a bulldog, and I think that, you know, you hate the whole Chicago tough mentality kind of thing, but I think that at this point where they are, as they enter year three of this rebuild, they need some guys who aren't going to back down to anything, and I think that a guy like him or a Taj Gibson could really inject, you know, some grit and some nasty into this team.
Yeah, and they need it. I mean, you know, Robin Lopez is, when pushed into a corner, can be a scary guy. I mean, you could ask Serge Ibaka, but it takes a ton to get him pushed into that corner. He's pretty mild-mannered. So I don't think of him as that tough guy. But that was the closest they had to it. I mean, you know, I thought Chris Dunn would be a little more, you know, you talk to guys, and in practice, he's the biggest trash talker. He's the biggest instigator. He's that one. But it doesn't really translate to an NBA game. He doesn't talk as much as people think, or as much he does to his own teammates. You know, Bobby Portis had some of that. You know, you could ask Nico, obviously, a lot of that.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? There wasn't that I don't want to mess with this guy because that's his teammate. You know, there's none of that with the Bulls. There's almost a softness to this team that permeates not only the way they play, but just their backbone at times. You know, that's why a guy like Patrick Beverley would be, I mean, he checks all the boxes. I'm anxious to see what the market does with him, though.
Is Rolo going to be back, or is he going to get priced out of here because they have other needs with that free agent money?
I'm sorry, who's that?
Rolo.
You know what? I don't see the money. Or, I mean, if they're talking about, you know, Felicio is locked in. They love Wendell, even though I think people are jumping on the Wendell Carter bus way too early because he's a vastly undersized center. I mean, he's Horace Grant out there playing center, which I understand you can get away with that in a positionless NBA, but there's times where more physical, bigger centers have totally just overpowered him.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I'm anxious to see what they add to his body. He is only 19, what he can develop into. And then, you know, Lowry, their best lineup is when they go with their version of the lineup of death, and Lowry's playing the five because he's a horrible matchup and for a lot of other fives. And that's why, you know, I mean, everyone's like, well, if they get Zion Williamson, what do they do? Well, it's easy what they do. Lowry's your five. Zion's your big body that covers the big body guy. And Wendell, guess what? You're on the bench, bro.
Right.
So I think it's an easy fix if they get Zion. It's not like all of a sudden they're like, oh, no, what do we do? But I don't see how Rolo fits in that no matter who they draft. I just don't see with Felicio, Wendell, and Lowry where he would get minutes that would be worth re-upping for. I know he loves Chicago. I do think he would give somewhat of a hometown discount to stay in Chicago, but I just don't think the minutes are going to be there that either side comes to an agreement and says, yeah, this works out. Now, maybe there's no market for him and they get him on the cheap. I mean, we saw what happened with Nico when Nico was a restricted free agent. There was no bids on him. There was nothing. And so they were bidding against themselves when it was time to negotiate. And so, maybe Rolo, there's no market for him, and they just do him a solid, get him on the cheap. I just don't see it. I just don't see the minutes. You know, he even said, look, I love it here. I love the guys here. But, you know, every guy wants to win. Every guy wants to be playing into April and May and possibly June. And, you know, I don't know how quickly that's going to come with the Bulls.
Your Bulls, your way, anywhere, anytime. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Stream games and get the best Bulls coverage in Chicago at your fingertips. Download the My Teams app today.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Mark Schanowski, joined by Joe Colley, the outstanding Bulls beat reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Joe, just a couple more things. We'll let you get on with your off-season activities. One name you didn't mention, or maybe you just mentioned him in passing in your article about possible point guard additions, was Derrick Rose. You know, that's the flashpoint name with all Chicago fans. You get incredible reaction both ways whenever you write something about Derrick Rose. Do you think John Paxson would dip his toe into that water again and bring him back? Because, honestly, he might be the cheapest guy available because all that shoe money he's got coming to him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, financially you could say, okay, there, I see a path there. But, I mean, so is he going to start for you? I mean, you can't trust him as a starter because you're not going to get – I mean, first of all, they need some – you know, the biggest ability they need right now is availability at that point guard spot and a lot of spots. I mean, they can't keep people on the court. You're not going to get a full season from them. That's just the history. Even this year, as much as people want to tout his season, I mean, he still goes through a lot of bumps and bruises. So I don't think he's a starter for you. And so, okay, well, maybe he accepts that role coming off the bench. I mean, how does he make the second team better? And what is he bringing? And I just think they're kind of over the whole Derrick thing. And, you know, I know they have a relationship with him, a good relationship. He works out the Advocate Center in the summer. He has a, you know, basically a key to that place whenever he wants it. The Bulls are very accommodating to him. I don't think there's the angst and the ugliness there may have initially been right when he was traded, or the hurt feelings, I should say. I think everyone's kind of over that. I just don't see it as a fit. And I think that chapter just has to close. Because then it just looks like, okay, now you're chasing another hometown kid and you're just trying to put butts in the seats again. And is it really about winning basketball? I mean, does Derrick Rose make them a better team? Possibly somewhat, but...
Well, if he plays like he did this year, scoring off the bench was something they really need because that second unit really killed them in a lot of games this year. They have to strengthen that bench.
Yeah, the bench, I mean, but, you know, they feel like, well, the bench is going to be strengthened just by help. And there's some, you know, there's something to that. I think they're relying too much on that. Again, that's them overreaching on their player talent, which they seem to do. Denzel Valentine,
Chandler Hutchinson.
Yeah, Jam, And, you know, Denzel shows signs that he can shoot it from outside. He'll be a nice addition. Chandler, you know, I mean, Chandler had a couple moments, but was kind of just another guy out there. And you hear them talk about, like, well, that's, again, another free agent. Well, what free agent talent level is that? You know what I mean? So, you know, he has a lot to show. But I just think the Derrick Rose thing has to come to an end and close. And I get it. I get what he meant to 2010 and 11. That's it. It's over. I mean, you know, I didn't watch the documentary that he did because, you know, I didn't feel like watching on the Sci-Fi Channel. From what I heard, that's where it should have been. But, you know, I just think it's time that we say, all right, let's watch him from afar. Let's cheer for him from afar. If he does good things like he did in Minnesota the first half of the season, you know, good for him. He's overcome a lot. I don't think he needs to be in a Bulls uniform again. I don't think it just does the product any good.
Yeah, going back to the way we started this interview, you know, some people feel like you're anti-Derrick Rose. You know, in 2014, 15, 16, the whole Bulls situation kind of devolved into a Team Derrick, Team Jimmy thing. And a lot of the stuff you wrote seemed to favor building around Jimmy. I know right before they traded Jimmy, you wrote that he was trying to find a way to get Kyrie Irving to team up with him. Of course, the Bulls had no assets to trade for a Kyrie Irving, but you still feel, looking in the rearview mirror, that they'd been better off trying to build around Jimmy?
Yeah, I still think that I would have liked to see what Jimmy, who is liked by a lot of big-time players, not so much by some of the younger players in the league,
right,
but definitely liked by some of the big-time vet players that play, you know, USA basketball and are in the All-Star games. You know, Jimmy attracts those kind of guys, and I would have been anxious to see what they – now, obviously, the big thing was they would have to give him the max deal, which I think, what was it, $240 million or $230 million. So you're talking about a John Wall situation, and we saw that's going on in Washington. So I get that. That they didn't want to invest that much in Jimmy Butler, who's not a frontline guy. But I just feel like Jimmy brings in frontline type players, and I would have been anxious to see what he would have pulled off, because this is a guy that wanted to win here. He was your star that you could build around. I don't think he's a leading man, but I definitely think he's a great Robin to someone's Batman. So, yeah, I would have been anxious to see what would have happened. I get what they did. I don't know if that was the right course of action, especially considering where they are now, because I don't see them getting back to a place that where they were with Jimmy and above it, because that's where, like I said, that's the promise. So, but you know, that's all going to be the island of what if, and we'll see kind of where everyone goes this year. It's going to be a strange off season, I think. And you brought up the name. I think everyone's like Anthony Davis and blah blah blah. And I think the first domino in all of this is going to be Kyrie. I just have a feeling he's the first domino in what the Lakers do with Anthony Davis, or does Boston jump in? Because if he leaves Boston, do they now say, we need a star and we need Anthony Davis? And I think he's kind of the first domino in this offseason, which will be full. This is going to be the ultimate sports soap opera this summer, because there's just so many moving pieces and so many guys that are just kind of weird dudes. I mean, Kawhi is a weird guy. KD is kind of his own enigma, weird guy. Kyrie, you know, these guys are all just kind of off-the-wall thinkers. So you can't say the obvious anymore. I mean, the Lakers and LeBron, everyone kind of put that together and said, okay, that's obvious. You can't do that this offseason. I'm anxious to see where everyone goes, who follows them there. It's going to be something.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating offseason, and the Bulls are going to be right in the middle of it. Joe, thanks for taking some time with us today. Look forward to seeing you at the draft lottery on May 14th. It could change the fortunes of a number of franchises, including the Bulls. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you real soon.
Anytime, Mark.
That is Joe Colley, the beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Remember, you can find all of our shows at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Google Play, and Stitcher. We'll be coming at you again real soon. So long, everybody.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.